Lord, thank you for our class today. Thank you for what the major prophets have to say to us. Thank you that they went before us and they bore burdens that we'll never have to bear, went through things we'll never have to go through, and all so that we could get your son out of their writings. Lord, let their example be an illustration for us of how Christ is to live in each and every one of us. Lord, even more than the futuristic things that they say or the impressive visions, let that spirit permeate our very being. In Jesus' name, amen. And isn't that the reason for the prophets? Is the spirit that permeated them and the form they took on? You know, every major world religion has their prophets and people who claim to tell the future. So that would make the Jewish prophets no different than you know, Confucian people and, you know, the oracles for the Greek religions and whatnot. But we have prophets that come to us that experience the very sufferings of Christ and did not see in their day the fruit that would come forth from that. They took the loss without participating in the harvest. And Christ in us is the harvest. You know, they were sowing ahead of time before Jesus came. And you know, I was thinking about even the last couple of days, how the Spirit of Christ truly is when a person who has Jesus in them truly chooses to take the loss and go down and to have a sweet and content spirit with that, not expecting to get something back, but simply taking that loss, whatever that loss may be, and bearing it in the right spirit without looking for gain in return. And the Lord loves that. He loves that spirit. And that's what the spirit that Jesus had on the cross. So I believe the prophets, in some form or fashion, they had that, even though Jesus hadn't come yet. The Spirit of God in them that was giving them the gift of prophecy perhaps was helping. I don't know how it all works, but I know that they had that image. I know that they did. And that's why they're in the Bible, not because they tell the future. That's why they're in the Bible. Okay, so today we are going to be devoting the entire hour, class hour, to Daniel. Good morning to everybody on Zoom. We have Marcia today. Good morning, Marcia. And we have my parents, Dennis and Jan, and we have Michael Roche also. Good morning to you. And we are going to just move right in here. And the first thing I want to do before really diving into Daniel, and I've done this with the other prophets, is I would love to hear from you. As you read the book of Daniel, I am sure you did not understand everything you read, and that is okay, because there's some pretty amazing visions and things in there that people have been delving deep into for centuries and not always agreeing. So if you don't get it all, that's okay. We're just here to be before the Lord. He said, read the scriptures, and that's what we do. Understanding it is up to him. He does that in us. So, but that said, I'm interested to hear in any comparisons between Daniel and any of the other major prophets, similarities, differences, things that struck you as you read. Because I'm sure as you have been reading now and have read through all the prophets, you've begun to notice they all have their own style, focus, things like that. So, yes, Isaac, why don't you kick us off?
The first thing I noticed, so I can't remember, was it in Ezekiel where someone appeared with that shone like bronze on his skin?
Yes, that would have been Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Daniel, we've had the same thing, but it was more close to, in Revelation when Jesus was described, it was almost like word for word.
What chapter was that in?
I think it was like 9 or 10. Exactly.
Okay, remember. Back in the prophetic stuff. Yeah.
That just stuck out to me.
So the same bronze guy shows up to both prophets.
This is really random. I was really thinking about it because it was described differently, that he shone like bronze in Daniel, mm-hmm, versus he was bronze in Ezekiel. Okay. I was trying to understand what is that saying? And mm-hmm, I think I understood this is not spiritual at all, yeah, but I was pondering it for a mm-hmm long time for whatever mm-hmm reason. That his skin, it says his hands and feet are bronze because that's what you see of his skin. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's the same thing. It's the same guy, mm-hmm, even though one says his hands and feet are bronze,
yeah,
because he's wearing clothes. So the rest is covered in clothes. So I was like, is this the same guy? Like, super detailed about it.
Well, it wouldn't be surprising if it were, because they're ministering at the same time, you know? So it would be not surprising if the Lord was appearing in the same view for different people. So that's interesting. All right. Anything else that you would like to comment on? How was Daniel the same or different from any of the other prophets? And if you had something else, Isaac, that's fine. Marcia, I would love to hear your opinion.
It felt in a lot of ways very different because it didn't talk so much towards the Israelites, like only the little part that Daniel is kind of like repenting for the whole people. But besides that, it's not about that at all, I feel like. But what I did felt like was a similarity. It was like it was describing a lot, I felt, about the kings that are described, of like Medo-Persia, like Nebuchadnezzar, his son, and then also Greece, I guess, and also the Romans, that they were really lifted themselves up really high. Like the whole like pro-self class, I felt like was written all over it. And then I felt like it kind of reminded me of that similarity in like Ezekiel, where it's like that chapter where, you know, it's talking about a king, but it's also really, people think or say like it's talking about the devil, you know what I mean? Like how you've fallen. And it kind of reminded me of that same spirit in those foreign kings. Like they're all like that pro-self spirit, how they think they're gods. So that's a little similarity that stood out to me.
Marcia, that was incredible. I am so blessed by that. I think you're completely right. I think that just that whole, that spirit that was in Lucifer, and you're right, it's in Ezekiel 28, and it's talking about the king of Tyre, I think, in, if I'm not mistaken, in Ezekiel 28. But really, it's talking to the spirit that was giving him his oomph, right? His motivation and his desires. And I think you're right that Daniel is describing the spirit behind the kings of the world, the kingdoms of this world. And you're also very good to observe that he wasn't ministering to Israel or the Jews at all. He was, when the Lord was giving him words, it was more just for whoever would listen. He wasn't saying, say to the Jews in captivity, like the Lord would say to Ezekiel. And he wasn't saying to Daniel, like to Jeremiah, speak to those, the princes in Jerusalem or something. He's just speaking. So you're right. That's a really good parallel and really good contrast. I really like that. Does anybody else have anything? Scott, yes. And you can come up here if...
They can hear me.
Okay, that's fine. This is Scott Moore back in the sound booth.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. I think Daniel brings out how God can use some of these foreign leaders while at the same time them being wrong. Having a wrong spirit, but God's still using them and God's still working on them. Like Nebuchadnezzar, you know, through the whole book, you know, at one point, you know, he keeps seeing more and more how God is God. And in the end, he goes through this whole thing of being taken into madness and then brought back out and then declaring the Lord. So it's just interesting to see that, how he shows that with rulers, how God deals with them.
That is powerful. Another powerful observation. And yes, and wouldn't you say that would be relevant for our nation right now, to understand that you can have rulers, albeit not emperors like Nebuchadnezzar, but, you know, even elected officials that maybe we don't like who's in power, but maybe God put them there. Maybe it's his hand and they can be as wrong can be, and God can be dealing with them. And God might even have somebody like Daniel there serving them and ministering to them. And God could be bringing their hearts along, and God could be using them in their wrongness to deal with his own people. Wow. Now just think about that for a minute, because that's a whole lesson in itself that we can't get into. But seriously, guys, Daniel, we're going to talk about his excellent spirit, and that's part of his excellent spirit, that he was able to serve in that kind of an environment and do it in a humble, sweet, meek, kind spirit that is Christ, even though everything around him was wrong, you know. And, you know, a lot of times for us, we don't, as American Christians, we see that we have to, you know, protest or do something about what's wrong. But Daniel shows us how to live in the midst of what's wrong and to thrive in the Lord and to be a force for his purposes, God's purposes in the earth, you know. So thank you for that. Anything else? Yeah, Isaac.
Maybe one thing, and I don't want to de-spiritualize everything. But
you're fine. Thinking, we're good. Okay.
I'm just thinking about the chronology of how the Old Testament was written. Daniel is one of the last prophets. Not the last, one of the last. Revelation, one of the last books written. Not, many would argue not the last. They would say John wrote his other stuff later, someone says. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Who knows? In any case, they're some of the last books. And they're both, and like John is so clearly taking so much of his stuff, like the thought behind it from Daniel. You know, there's even the writing style is so similar to Daniel. How even from the, like the structure, everything, the structure of the books, it's all so close. And I was thinking about how in both of them, you get to see a different view of a different perspective of Christ, and like mm-hmm. how Daniel, he doesn't know who Christ is. He doesn't see Christ yet. Mm-hmm. Like he sees this man and he describes all these things. Mm-hmm. And this is the end. This is the end of the mm-hmm. the deposit of the old covenant. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's sort of the final time of it. It's like he's getting to see this man and he doesn't know who he is.
Right.
And then in Revelation, John sees the same man again. It's like, wait, this man that appeared in Daniel, but then you can go to Ezekiel, who is his contemporary, and you can kind of trace through the whole Bible this this angel of the Lord, this thing that would appear. It's like, wait, this was God himself appearing to us, and this God that we've been seeing throughout the whole time, who wouldn't even declare himself, was the one who died on the cross. You know, you see, because at the beginning of Revelation, he sees him like Daniel sees him. At the end, it's a lamb, but it's still the same person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
good. Good. That's great. And also, since you're comparing Old and New Testament prophets, you ought to also dig a little into Jeremiah 50 and 51 with reference to Revelation, because John just plain old plagiarizes Jeremiah. Not really. He's seeing what Jeremiah is seeing with reference to Babylon. That whole "how is Babylon fallen?" It's all almost direct quotes out of Jeremiah 50 and 51. And that's a really great search too. Since you're in it, you might be interested in that. Okay, then let's go ahead and just dive right in. We're going to do a little bit of a review first. I like to do this because the repetition is probably the information you're going to remember out of this class, unless the Lord lands on something. So let's go ahead and put up the PowerPoint. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. They were all very good. And I'm just so pleased that you're present enough in the reading to notice these types of things. So, okay, so here we have Daniel, and I always like a little picture. And I chose a picture that we probably all recognize, but we've got Daniel in the lion's den, and the lions are sitting all around and looking like he might be a really tasty snack. And he's praying. He looks like he's at peace. He's just sitting there, and the lions are all nearby. But we know the Lord has shut the mouths of the lion, and we see to the upper right of the picture, kind of fading out, we see angels, probably, or the Lord ministering to Daniel. And then way at the top left, we have some people looking on to see if either he's going to get eaten or if he's going to be saved, because there were folks in both camps on that one. So that's our Daniel picture. Let's go ahead to slide 2 and just go through some quick review. This will be something you've seen before. There we go. And we're looking at the prophets again in relationship to the exile. And Daniel, you see, is right in that middle section. Where's my little pointer? In that middle section of the prophets that God used during the exile. See, right there in the middle, he's right there. And so we saw that Isaiah was one of most of the minor prophets that the Lord used before people went into captivity. Jeremiah kind of straddles pre and during, and Lamentations there. And then Daniel and Ezekiel are hard at it during that 70-year time outside the land. And then when the Jews come back from the exile, we have 3 prophets. So we're looking at Daniel today. We've seen Jeremiah and Ezekiel and how the Lord has worked there. Let's see. Let's go to the next slide. We're going to go right through these slides pretty quick. We have looked at this timeline before, but this is a review. And we just want to see how we've got Nebuchadnezzar. He's the big blue bar up at the top of the timeline. And then we have the last kings in that little yellow box. This big red box is the 70-year Jewish captivity. And you can see the pink box here is where Zerubbabel comes back when the Lord releases them. What this doesn't show is right here after after Nebuchadnezzar, you have a series of kings, because you have people killing each other off because they all want the throne. And some of them are related, some of them aren't. It's really complicated, so we're not going to get into that so much. If you'll notice the name, it's the evil Merodach comes up somewhere in somebody's book, probably Jeremiah. And then Belshazzar over here, the green guy, I think is the green box is Belshazzar. We see his name in Daniel's book. Maybe you remember, okay? After Belshazzar, Cyrus the Mede comes in and takes over, and he has Darius, his general, ruling over the city of Babylon and the region of Babylon. And that doesn't show in this timeline, but that's going on over here. And then down at the bottom, we have the prophets. We have this long white box, and that's where Jeremiah prophesied way back to beginning during Josiah's reign and all the way through into the captivity. See how he straddles before the red box and after the red box like that? Okay. Ezekiel starts prophesying 5 years after he goes into captivity, and he goes into captivity in the second wave. So that's right here. This middle arrow in the captivity shows the second wave. He goes there, and then 5 years later, he begins to prophesy, and he prophesies for 20 years. So Jeremiah's been going at it for a good long while, and Ezekiel picks up. Daniel is an interesting character. He goes into captivity in the very first wave, when Nebuchadnezzar comes in and takes princes and high-ranking officials back to Babylon. Daniel is in that group, okay? So that's way back over here. And then he begins to prophesy, a few years after he gets there. And his ministry lasts all the way to 536. His ministry lasts 2 or 3 years past when Zerubbabel goes back to the land. So Daniel goes into captivity with the first wave and ministers in the court all those 70 years until the first captives return. And then he dies. So he's a witness during the entire years of the captivity. And you can see how the red box and Daniel's very light yellow cream colored box almost match on the timeline. They're almost exact. Isn't that amazing? So that's what we're going to be looking at today. We're going to be focusing on Nebuchadnezzar, the 70-year Jewish captivity, a little bit over to Belshazzar and into Cyrus, and then Daniel at the bottom. And if you can see, they all kind of line up together. That's pretty amazing. Okay? So that's what we'll be looking at. I think there's another slide. Slide 4, I think. There we go. This is a review for us as well. The big purple in the middle of the slide is the Babylonian Empire. Okay, and we're going to take a look a little bit later in the class at the Medo-Persian Empire, which is not the same. So it includes the Babylonian Empire and adds more to it. So we're going to look at that later. But we'll see that Daniel was taken from Jerusalem way over here in the first wave of captives, would have followed the rivers down to Babylon, and he spent his whole life in Babylon, the rest of his life, in the city, okay, in the governmental structure in that city. Okay, so that's enough for now. We can turn off the slides for now. We will go back to some more slides when we are going to start covering a little bit of new ground a little later in our hour. So, yes. So, the name Daniel means God is my judge. God is my judge. And God is certainly judging his people during this time, isn't it? So that can be a little scary if you're not in Christ, or it can be wonderful if you're abiding in Christ. Because if you're abiding in Christ, God will judge you as one with his son. And he will use you as though Jesus were really in you, ministering in those kind of ways. We won't get to that right now. Can we turn that off?
Yeah,
thanks.
I just was advancing it.
All right, thank you. In New Testament or in Christian circles, Daniel is considered a major prophet. Okay. And that is for all Christians everywhere. In any, if you went to any Bible school, a Catholic Bible school, if you went to a seminary, Daniel is classified as the major prophets. If you speak to a Jewish scholar, Daniel is not classified with the prophets. And there are reasons for that. He is classified with the wisdom books. And that would include like Proverbs, and that would include Esther, I think, is included in the wisdom books, and the Psalms, which is interesting because we don't include him in the wisdom books. So, and there are reasons for that. He didn't, and we'll take a look at this in the scriptures, but he doesn't prophesy all the time. He just has a few prophecies, but his ministry is thing in areas other than prophecy. He operated in gifts of wisdom and discernment of spirits and knowledge a lot. We don't see that with Isaiah. We don't really see it with Jeremiah or Ezekiel, but he is able to interpret dreams and speak to highly symbolic things, and the Lord gives him insights, and that's not really prophecy. That's wisdom. Also, unlike Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel, Daniel never received a call to the office as prophet. Think about the book. In Isaiah, in chapter 6, he is called. Here I am, send me, he says. Who will go for us? Here I am, send me. Jeremiah, in chapter 1 of his book, is called as a young man, that he is going to be called to speak to the Jews about the upcoming judgment and to not worry about it. God was going to make him able to do that, and he was going to suffer. And then over in Ezekiel chapter 3, Ezekiel is called to the office of prophet. Daniel is never called to the office of prophet. He operates in prophetic gifts. So this is one reason why the Jews do not classify him as a prophet. Okay. But we Christians are very taken with his prophecies, and many times they are classed as end time or eschatology type prophecies, and that's why we have put him as a prophet. So all in how you view it. Okay, let's take a look at chapter 1. We're going to look at a few things about Daniel. And we'll start right with verse 1 here and read the first 4 verses. In the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. So remember Jehoiakim? Remember our list of kings? Do we have a list of kings, Scott? I think I do in that PowerPoint at the very end. There should be a list of the 5 last kings of Israel. Could you pop that up there? There it is. So where's Jehoiakim? Josiah is at the top. He's the first guy. See, this is why these little timelines are nice, okay? And that's when Jeremiah started. Then Jehoahaz, his son, was on the throne for 3 months. Then Jehoiakim was put on the throne, and he reigned 11 years, okay? So Daniel's book begins with the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim. That's that guy right there. I think the people put Jehoiakim on the throne, if I'm not mistaken, after Jehoahaz was taken to Egypt. So he's the 3rd year on the throne. Came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, to Jerusalem and besieged it. Okay, so way back in the 3rd year of Jehoiakim, there's a siege on Jerusalem. Now, the siege that destroyed Jerusalem begins in the 9th year of Zedekiah. So that's 17 years later. So this is another siege. Nebuchadnezzar's flexing his muscles. He's conquering lands, and here he comes. Okay, so he besieges it, and verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. The Lord gave Jehoiakim into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. Would God ever do such a thing? That wasn't the devil, that was the Lord? Yeah, that was the Lord, okay? With part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels unto the treasure house of his God. And the king spake to Ashpenaz, master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes. So who is it? The descendants of the king. Who are the kings descended from? All of them. David. Okay, king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish but well favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge and understanding, not science, and had such and as such has had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So They're looking for the creme de la creme, the best and the brightest. And that's pro-self if I ever heard it, right? Because what does Nebuchadnezzar want? He wants the very best peoples, the very best minds, the intellects, the ones who can think strategically, the ones who can think politically, the ones who can master several languages so they can do diplomatic work, and ones that are quick to learn that they can infuse quickly with their whole system of the way they do things and their language. He wants those taken back to Babylon so they can serve Nebuchadnezzar and strengthen his kingdom. Okay? And guess what? Daniel was one of those. So apart from being fluent in, if I may say it this way, in spiritual giftings, he had a lot of natural ability. Okay? Now that's interesting. God does not need us to have natural ability, does he? He doesn't need that. But Nebuchadnezzar thought he needed that, and God was using what Nebuchadnezzar was doing. Okay? All right. Daniel was taken in the first deportation during the fourth year of Jehoiakim, in which went the seed royal. That was verse 2. Verse 3, perhaps Daniel is a descendant of David. It doesn't say. He's either related to David by descent, or he's one of the princes. So he would have been, you know, ready to serve the king in Jerusalem, whoever that might be. He was to be educated and utilized in the court in matters of state. So he's going, and he's going to have a really high position in the world's eyes. He's going to be very close to the king. However, it says in verse 3 that the king spoke to Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs. So the implication is that all of these guys are going to be castrated. And they would serve, that way they could serve closely to the king without any threat of him sleeping with his wives or having it, his own heir to the throne, you know. They would have no, it secures the king's throne if he has eunuchs surrounding him. So that poses problems for Jews because their whole purpose of being on earth is to bring forth the Messiah. So Daniel's out, right? See, it's not coming through him if he's a eunuch. Also, he will never be permitted into the temple because nobody who has been deformed that way can go into the temple. And that's back earlier in the scriptures. So he has been made an outcast by the Babylonian Empire. Now, if you were in that position and you had a heart for the Lord and wanted to serve him, because obviously Daniel had a heart for the Lord, he was not one of the ones that was being prophesied to. He had a sweet spirit and served the Lord, and we know it, first rattled out of the box, not wanting to eat the Babylonians' food. So we know he was with the Lord in the midst of all kinds of rebellion back in Jerusalem, right? So he's there, he's following Jesus. And so he had hopes and plans for following Jesus, if you will, following the Lord. And he would have had hopes and plans, and now they're gone. You know, so what kind of attitudes would that, or reactions would that stir up in somebody who loves the Lord? Well, that would be something you might have to wrestle with. He doesn't talk about it in his book, but just put yourself in his position, you know. So there's more here going on than just, wow, he's in this place of influence and it's amazing. And maybe God will use me like he used Daniel. You know, he has ways of keeping all of us low. And if he wants to use us in high ways, he'll make sure that we stay humble first. And I just wonder if that was going on. I don't know. I can't speak to that fully, but I wonder about those things. Okay, so we'll go down to verse 17 here. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And he's talking about not only Daniel, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. So this is going to support Babylon. They're not helping the people over at the temple because that's going to be destroyed. God is giving these three young men ability to serve Babylon. Just think about that. Okay, these are things to ponder, you know. So Daniel also received that skill, and along with that skill, he got something else from the Lord. He had understanding in all visions and dreams. That was from the Lord. That wasn't from him being super smart and good with policy making, you know. Let's see. So here Daniel's giftings are listed, and prophecy is not mentioned in those giftings. We have learning and wisdom and understanding in all visions and dreams. Okay, verses 18 through 20. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, so when their schooling was done, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore stood they before the king. So the Lord likes the king likes what they have to offer. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Huh. Because the kingdom of Babylon relied heavily on astrology and the occult for their power and their knowledge and their wisdom. So maybe now it's becoming a little clear why it is that the Lord gave them so much favor and gifted them with the wisdom and knowledge. The Lord wanted to display his witness before, you know, the powers of darkness. I think of that verse over in Ephesians 3 just now. What does it say exactly? I'm going to read it because it's really good. Ephesians chapter 3. Let's see, verse 9. To make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world has been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ. Now, do you suppose Nebuchadnezzar believed that? No. So, to the intent that now, unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places, might be made known by the church the manifold wisdom of God. Maybe that verse was playing out a little bit here. That in the midst of all of this spiritual wickedness that governed this particular kingdom, I mean, we know that the prince of darkness, Lucifer himself, was the spirit behind this kingdom because Ezekiel prophesied against it and said as much. Maybe the Lord put them there not because it was a promotion for these four young men, but because the Lord was trying to display his wisdom in contrast to the might and the power and the self-exaltation of the occult spirits that governed that society. Pretty cool, huh? A little scary if you're the person God's using, maybe, because you're kind of in the minority, and who's to say everyone would like you? All the, you know, grand occultists may not think you're awesome, but the Lord gave favor, and the king said, this is 10 times better than any of the guys I've been listening to for years. So you guys are in. All right. So that's kind of interesting. So they're highly placed in the government to have dealings with kings. This is where God allows Daniel to be put, and this is where God will use him. And Marcia was right. From now on, Daniel's not even ministering to the Jews. He's ministering to pagan kings. And God put him there. And God's using it. And he displayed, and we're going to see this all his life, Daniel displayed a beautiful spirit for all 70 years. It's like this little candle was burning in Babylon, and it was just the light of Jesus. Did the sun come forth from him? No, because he was castrated. But the scriptures rarely speak of eunuchs having a place in the kingdom. Isaiah had a thing about it, that eunuchs would be given a name in the Lord's house, and a name means progeny. And Jesus talks about those who are not eunuchs but make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom. And maybe Daniel chose to make himself a eunuch for the kingdom. I won't be the one to bring forth the physical seed of Christ in the earth, but by golly, I'm going to do everything I can to pave the way. He did it. Okay, so that's a little bit about Daniel. The structure of the book is pretty simple. You have history or the dealings of or the experiences of Daniel in chapters 1-6. From the time that he leaves Jerusalem and is taken to Babylon, all the way to the end of his life, when the Medo-Persian Empire has conquered Babylon and he's promoted by Darius to be over the three presidents that are over the 127 provinces. So he's over everybody except Darius, and some people don't like that. They feel a little snubbed, and they feel like if they can just get Daniel out of the way, then they would get the promotion. Ah, the wisdom of man, the wisdom of man. So he is these enemies of Daniel finagle to throw him in the lion's den. Well, what is brought out many times is that he was in his 80s when this happened. You know, I mean, if they just waited, he wasn't going to live forever. But no, they had to seal their own death warrant. So God used it one more time to display where his favor lay. And his favor lay not necessarily with Daniel, but the excellent spirit that was in him. And that's what raised him up out of that death situation. So the first 6 chapters are history, Daniel's history and his dealings with world leaders. Chapters 7-12 are the prophetic visions that the Lord gave him with reference to world leaders and, we suppose, things in the future, and also Christ. Of course, Christ, because all the prophets testify of Christ. So what happens is chapters 7 and 8 don't go chronologically after six, and so forth. As a matter of fact, why don't we put up slide five now? We're going to look at that timeline real quick, and this will give us a little bit of insight. Here we go. This is the one. Now, this is new. This is not review. And what we're looking at here is Daniel's ministry on earth, as well as where the chapters fall chronologically on a timeline. Okay? So you can see, they don't even put chapter one up there, but chapter one would be at the very beginning. Let's see, where's my little pointer guy? Okay. Oops, wrong way. This is chapter one. Chapter two with the big image that Nebuchadnezzar dreams about, that's right there. Chapter three, probably the fiery furnace. Chapter four is here. Okay, and that's where Nebuchadnezzar kind of goes crazy for a bit. I think that's chapters four and five, if I'm not mistaken. He has a dream and Daniel interprets it, and he goes crazy for a bit till he can humble his heart. Okay, and then chapters 7 and 8 occur here, and this is a vision he has. Let me see here. When is that? 7 and 8 occur during Belshazzar's reign, I believe in the first few years, somewhere in there. He gets this vision, and so there's a handoff. We have the big, you know, tree vision by Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel interprets it. There's 7 years of madness. And then he comes out of it. And then we don't really hear about Nebuchadnezzar anymore, because Nebuchadnezzar is in line with God, and we don't hear about Daniel anymore for a lot of years. And there are various kings you can see up here that take the throne. I can't even read them all. Good grief. There's Amel-Marduk, Nergal-Sharezer, who's one of his generals, there's Labash-Marduk, Nabonidus, and then there's Belshazzar. Now, some of those guys are generals that served under Nebuchadnezzar that felt like they should be the king, and so they kill somebody. One of them is his son, and he's the one who got killed. It's all a big, dramatic, confusing soap opera kind of a situation, and I was going to explain it to you, and then I thought, I'm not going to explain it to you if you're really interested, because I can't even remember it after I've read it. It's just complicated because there's a lot of instability. People are vying for the throne. But what ends up happening is Nabonidus is son-in-law to Nebuchadnezzar, and he has married Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. And Belshazzar is the son of the Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. So he is Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. And that is when he gets put on the throne in his first, like, 3 years, Daniel prophesies or sees chapter 7 and 8. Okay, so that's between 4 and 5. Chapter 5 happens after 7 and 8. That's later on at the end of Belshazzar. It's the last night of Belshazzar's rule as king, because that's the time that the Medo-Persians come and capture Babylon. That very night he's partying, and he sees the handwriting on the wall, and he doesn't know what it means, but he's afraid. And the queen mother, this guy's wife, says, oh, you know what? There was this guy way back in the day when my dad was the king, and he advised him, and he had the spirit of the gods in him, and he could interpret stuff like this. I wonder if he's still around. Now think about that. Daniel's so close to the king for so many years, and now nobody even knows who he is or where he is. But they find him. He comes out. He prophesies, well, this means that your kingdom's about to end, like tonight, and that night it happened. So Darius the Mede takes over Babylon for Cyrus, king of Persia, and rules in his stead. And during that era, we have chapter 9 right there. We have chapter 5, 6, and when 6 is Daniel's in the lion's den. It happens almost immediately after this whole scenario. Then we have chapter 9, which is a vision. And then we have 11 and 12. And then two, and this one doesn't really show it, but then we have 11 and 12, and then a couple years later, the last vision is vision number 10, or chapter 10. So it's not in chronological order at all. You don't have to if you're just going to study the prophecies, but you get a sense of what's going on here. And you see here that they go back to build the temple before the prophecies in chapters 10 through 12. The prophecies happen after they go back. And then he passes. Okay, sorry, I hope that's not too boring. So let's see here. Let's look at slide 6 real quick. The next slide. Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Here we have, forget the bear, that's the representation of the Medo-Persian Empire. Remember what we saw of the Babylonian Empire and where that lay? It was here and went up to here, kind of around in here and back like this, right? It's a big purple blob right there. Look how big the Medo-Persian Empire is. It was already functioning over in here. And it just assimilated the Babylonian Empire and then the Lydian Empire up into Macedonia and all the way up into here. It just took over everything. It like doubled or tripled in size. It's huge. That's the Medo-Persian Empire. And so that is who Daniel served the last 3 years of his life. It is who Ezra served. That's who Nehemiah served as cupbearer to the king. And that's who Esther served, was the king over this empire right here. But this empire, Cyrus, was the guy who let them go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. That was the end of the 70-year captivity, even though there are still people in charge. Okay, let's see here. Let's go back to slide 5. And I might not get back through everything. We may have to finish this up next week, so I'm not going to hurry because there's some really good points. That's basically what I want to tell you about the information of Daniel. What I want to share now is a little bit about maybe some of the heart exhortations that the Lord has given me in my study of Daniel. So I hope that these things will feed your heart. And we'll do a little bit here and we will finish them up next week. Okay, let's see here. So under Nebuchadnezzar's rule, I'm just going to leave this up here for you to refer to and I'm going to share, but I'm leaving it here for you guys to be able to kind of refer. So we have chapters 1 through 4. Look how many years that takes up. How many decades is that? I'm gonna walk off camera for a second. 605
to 685. All right, so 20 years maybe, right?
Where Daniel is in the thick of it. He is a very close advisor to Nebuchadnezzar during that time, and Nebuchadnezzar is listening to him, right? Nebuchadnezzar reigned for 43 years, and Nebuchadnezzar's rule went past chapter 4, but we just don't have anything written in the Bible about it. But we know Daniel's still there. Daniel didn't fall out of Babylon during that time, right? We can assume that he was probably ministering before Nebuchadnezzar until the day Nebuchadnezzar died and his son took the throne, okay? So, but we know that for, you know, I don't know how long that would have been, to 563. So from 601, by the time he got out of, you know, eunuch school, to 563, that's like 38 years, Daniel would have served as a close, confidant, and advisor to Nebuchadnezzar. Now think about that position. Put yourself there. What would that be like? He had the favor of the king, right? I mean, he didn't get his head chopped off for the king getting mad at him ever. So they were like that. So he had the king's favor. The king respected him. What would that have done for his reputation? He would have had a great reputation. Right? Everybody would have honored Daniel because they don't want to cross Nebuchadnezzar. Right? So he would have had a great position. He would have had a great reputation. He would have had good food. He wouldn't have had a paycheck because he lived in the palace complex. And in the viewpoint of the Eastern monarchs and tyrants, they owned everything. They owned all the people. They owned all the money. They owned all the livestock. And they just let you live here and serve them. And the people belonged to them. They really believed that in their hearts. There was no sense of equality until the Greeks came along and invented the republic and democracy and stuff like that. So we are in a position where Daniel is owned by Nebuchadnezzar. So he doesn't get a paycheck. He lives in the palace. He serves at the king's pleasure. But he would have had a lot of nice clothes. He probably had really nice quarters. You know, a set of rooms that were his, probably a really nice garden. He probably had servants. So he probably lived better than the kings in Jerusalem ever did. But he was a eunuch and he was a slave. Okay. But it would have been a pretty good life by worldly standards. Okay. For a long time. You get used to that kind of standard of living, wouldn't you? Okay. But when a change in king comes, do you know what happens? They change their personnel. Daniel was not an elected official. Daniel wasn't entitled to be that close to every king that followed. So we know by the time Belshazzar shows up, years and years down, that no one even knows who Daniel is except an old woman who was Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. She's the only one who remembers Daniel. So by the time Belshazzar is on the throne at the end of his career, we don't even know what's going on with Daniel. Well, we do. There's a couple of verses that give us an insight. But he is no longer a close confidant of the king. So if he is no longer a close confidant of the king, what does that mean? Probably his quarters got moved. Probably he doesn't have important jobs anymore. Probably his servants got given to the other guy who's now important, to the next king. Do you see what I'm saying? Things shift. Seasons change, okay? So during the reign of other kings, Daniel probably occupied a lower station, still serving the king, but that was a big mechanism. That was a big piece of machinery. So you could be a little cog and the king not even know, and you're still serving the king, and you're in a much lower position. Okay, so we know that he's still serving the king because if you go over to chapter 8 in the prophecy section of Daniel, verses 1 and 2, it says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me. So the third year of the reign. So that doesn't mean he's advising Belshazzar. That means that's when the dream took place. You see what I'm saying? He wasn't known by Belshazzar. We know that by what happens in chapter 5 at the end of Belshazzar's reign, right? Okay, a vision appeared to me, even unto Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass, when I saw that I was at Babylon? No, where was he? Shushan. Okay, let's throw up our Assyrian map again and see where that is real quick. What did I do with my little pointer? Oh, there it is. It's black. Let's go back to slide 6. Yeah, it's the big, yes. Okay, so here's Babylon. That's where Daniel has been for decades. And now he's crossed the river, and he's here in Shushan. Shushan is the capital of the Assyrian Empire. He's no longer in Babylon. I don't know if he got moved or no, probably not, because Babylon is still the capital. I am misspeaking here. It is not yet the Persian Empire. The Medo-Persian Empire has not yet conquered Babylon. So they are in Babylon. Belshazzar is Nebuchadnezzar's grandkid, and he's partying it up instead of governing like he should be. And Daniel is called in at the very end to say, hey, you're about to be conquered by this guy. But in the meantime, on matters of state, Daniel has been sent to Shushan when, like a diplomatic ambassador mission. And he's probably not the main guy because it doesn't say that he was the one that took the message. It just says the third year of Belshazzar's reign, I just happened to be in Shushan. So he was probably part of a diplomatic entourage that went to Shushan, and while he was there, the Lord spoke to him. What's my point? The point is, he does not have the ear of the king at this time. He is in a much lower position right now than he was when Nebuchadnezzar was alive. Okay, probably still had some perks, but nowhere near what it was like before. And I'm trying to paint a picture for you, not because I think it's so important to have perks. I'm trying to put you there, and how would you feel if for 30 years you were in favor or more, and then you were moved from your quarters, given a lower post, and kind of forgotten after you had been so loyal for 40, 35 years. How does that make a human being feel? Not good. Don't like that. No. None of us like that. But it happened to Daniel. But Daniel doesn't take up any space in the Bible talking about it. Because he was of another spirit. He didn't eat the Babylonian food over in chapter 1. And that might have more meanings than just the physical food. You know what I'm saying? He was eating from another table, so he was of another spirit. He wasn't of the self-promotion spirit that we see described by Ezekiel in chapter 28. Okay? So we've already said over and over again in Daniel chapter 5 that he was completely unknown to Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, but we'll just read it because we're going to finish out this thought and then we'll close. But if we go to chapter 5 in Daniel, turn there to verses 10 through 13. The handwriting has appeared on the wall. They have been drinking out of the vessels. They have been drinking out of the vessels from the temple in Jerusalem and mocking the Lord and praising their own gods. And God's done. He is done with Babylon. Okay. So he writes on the wall, And this is what happens, verse 10. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house, and the queen spake. And this would be the queen mother, okay, the one that I was showing you on the timeline. Can we throw the timeline back up so that they have that?
Yes.
Thank you. And the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him. In him, in him. You see how it's in him, not on him? Isn't that amazing? And maybe if you could screen share it, maybe you're doing that. All right, thank you. He's getting it up for you guys on Zoom too. Was found in him whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Okay, just a side note. Daniel was in charge of everybody who practiced black arts. Those would have been interesting meetings, don't you think? Just put yourself in that position. Let's say America gets conquered someday. I hope it doesn't, but I'm just saying, for just pretend. And for whatever reason, the new emperor of America sets his eyes on you and thinks that you would be the one to be in charge of everybody who practices astrology and casts spells. What would you do? How would you? Anyway, that's just a side thought. But he's in a very interesting position, Daniel is. He leads an interesting life on a worldly side. Okay, anyway, verse 12. Forasmuch as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel whom the king named Belteshazzar, now let Daniel be called and he will show the interpretation. Then Daniel was brought in before the king, and the king spake and said, Daniel, thou art the child of the captivity, da 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 da. Okay, so he acts on his mother's advice and brings Daniel in, who interprets the handwriting, and the kingdom falls. But the point is that nobody knew who he was. And at this point, the king is so freaked out about this writing that's appeared on the wall that he said, whoever can decipher this, I'm going to make him, you know, third in the kingdom. I'm going to give him, clothe him in scarlet, and I'm going to put a gold chain around his neck. Now, Daniel would have had that under Nebuchadnezzar because he was number two under Nebuchadnezzar. So he didn't have it here. Nobody even knew who he was. So there was definitely no robes of scarlet or gold chain around his neck at this point in the game. Oh, this is the wrong timeline, Scott. 5, the one with Daniel,
okay.
Because they can't see what chapters we're talking about in this one.
Right.
There we go. That's the one we're looking for. Thank you. So this is happening at the end, right here. Whoops, right here at the end of this little brown box. This is where this is going on, right here. So he would have been clothed with a lot of honor here, but starting about here all the way to here, no name. That's from 563 to 539. Daniel would have been obscure, an obscure servant in the palace. Okay? So she remembers who Daniel was. Okay. Well, it's 11 o'clock. We're going to stop right there, and we're going to pick, because we're on a thought, because that's not the end of Daniel. We know he gets promoted again. So it's like up, down, up. Down. So we're going to continue looking at his roller coaster experiences in the earth, and we're going to draw some lessons from that next week. Okay? We'll just close real quick. Lord, thank you for our time today. And even though there was a lot of information today, I pray that you will just use it as you can and as you see fit, Lord, in the hearts of each and every one of us, and just throw out the rest. Bring us back next week to enjoy a little bit more of what Daniel has to share with us. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, guys, we'll finish.